Chapter 15. Robin had to bully his way through the mob outside the Grey Sheep. But once inside, his authoritative manner got the innkeeper's attention.
"Monsieur, such horrors! Here we have a guest most foully stabbed, a fainting maidservant, a puking manservant, a full in—"
Robin cut this off. "Who stabbed whom?" The man threw his hands wide.
"Monsieur, I have no idea. The man, he says nothing but curses in a foreign tongue. I think he is Italian. The other, he has disappeared. Some, they say, it was a woman. This, I cannot believe."
He turned to snap frantic directions to chaotic servants while attempting answers to questions from alarmed guests. Robin grabbed one servant.
"Where's the victim?"
The man jabbed a finger.
"There."
He looked green. Robin pushed into a ground-floor room where people gawked at a man on the ground. The stink of blood, shit, and vomit made Robin want to back out. When he saw where the man was clutching, where the blood came from, he understood why a manservant had puked. He really must be careful not to make Petra Daverio too angry. But a kind of laughter was bubbling up. No, she hadn't gone willingly. Not willingly at all. Shame the victim wasn't Varzi. But the bleeding man was tall, muscular, and in his 20s. How exactly had she managed to land any sort of blow on a man like that? A sallow-faced, middle-aged maid was standing in attendance, but not attempting any aid. If anything, she looked as if she were thinking sour, satisfied thoughts about the whole tribe of men. Robin went on one knee by the man and summoned his weak Italian.
"My poor man, how can I help you?"
Scrunched-up eyes opened a crack.
"Kill the bitch," he hissed.
"A woman did this to you?" he asked in innocent astonishment. Presumably the string of words that came next was yet more abuse of women.
"Quietly, my friend, quietly. A doctor has been summoned. All will be well. But do you have friends here? May I find them for you?"
The man perhaps relaxed a little. Alas, the wound wasn't as serious as it looked.
"Signor Varzi," the man muttered.
"My master, Signor Varzi."
"He is staying here?"
"Yes."
"The room number?"
But then a doctor rushed in, grey-haired this time, exclaiming in masculine horror. Robin had to retreat, shooed out with the rest. He saw the innkeeper knocking back a glass of brandy and went over.
"Nasty business."
The man shuddered. He snapped his fingers and another glass of brandy was brought. Robin sipped.
"Where is Signor Varzi?"
"Probably out booking his passage, monsieur." "Did he travel with just this man?"
"There is another, monsieur."
"And a woman, I gather."
"No, monsieur. Who she was, I cannot tell. A maid saw a woman in green running out just after the man started to yell. She said she carried a white cat."
He shrugged, hands spread again.
"Perhaps she was a witch."
Coquette. Why on earth had Petra taken the dog? But at least it sounded as if they had both been more or less all right when they'd escaped here. Very soon, however, there'd be a hue and cry for her. Robin tried to plant a seed.
"Perhaps Signor Varzi attacked his servant, and the woman merely glimpsed it and fled in horror.
Foreigners," he added in his most Gallic manner. "Italians are notoriously violent." The innkeeper nodded.
"Indeed, indeed."
Where would she run to? The Renard? Not when she'd been snatched from there. But she knew no one else in Boulogne. "The guard has been summoned," the innkeeper said, and as if triggered by his words, marching feet, then an order to halt sounded in the street. Robin slipped into the inn yard to blend into a chattering group. He didn't have to ask about the lady in green, for everyone was talking about her. Fortunately, the stories were garbled. In blue, no, green. With a hat, no, a cap. With a cat, no, a rat. Beautiful, a hag. Frightened, demented, cackling with evil. No one seemed sure which way she'd gone. One woman was convinced she'd turned into a crow and flown away. Robin left, thinking, Petra, you astonish me as always, but where the devil are you? He entered the street, alert for other gossip, but then froze. At the door of the Mouton Gris, the innkeeper was talking with much gesticulation to a swarthy middle-aged man. The plainly dressed man looked concerned and alarmed, just as he would be to find his servant cruelly assaulted. As Petra had said, Signor Varzi looked ordinary. Swarthy looks were often perceived as villainous, especially in England, where they were uncommon. But the man's roundness and jowls suggested a prosperous merchant, and his anxiously spread hands seemed soft. He even had sorrowful bloodhound eyes. He was a hound with razor-sharp teeth, however, and part of his teeth stood behind him, a lean, soberly dressed swordsman. Robin touched his own blade. That man had threatened Poeck. No time for that, for now at least. He had to find Petra before they did. He set off back to the Renard in hopes of news, but searched for her every step of the way. Instead, he saw a rag shop, heralded by bits of clothing hanging around the open door. An old woman sat knitting in the doorway, but she gave him a gap-toothed smile.
Come in. Come in, my lord. I have fine garments here, fit enough for court, some of them.
Robin didn't bother to argue. He entered the dingy, smelly place, scanning for what Petra would need, a concealing cloak. The women of Boulogne seemed to wear shawls and cloaks most of the time, so it wouldn't look out of the way. He found a dark red one. It was stained down one side, but of quite good quality. It even had a hood. How much? He asked the woman. Don't try to overcharge, for I've no time to play games. She looked suitably affronted at this unsportsmanlike announcement, but named a price that was tolerable. Robin paid, bundled it up, and left. He decided to risk some questions and ask two gossiping women if they'd seen his sister's dog. A silly little thing, all white fluff and wearing a fancy collar. No, they hadn't, and they warned that the collar, at least, might not last long around here. Then a shopkeeper, overseeing trays of fruit, remembered the dog with the huge feathery ears.
Had a fancy collar, sir, so I knew she'd stolen it. The thief went that way.
Robin passed over a coin and hurried on. That way was not toward the Renard. Then a group of children told him about the pretty dog who'd escaped to play with them and had been snatched back by an angry woman. She'd asked directions to the Coke door. Of course. The one place other than the Renard that she knew. Robin stopped himself from running, but he hurried, telling himself that these stories indicated that Petra was whole and well, and coquette too. But both must be terrified. The Grand Inn was busy, but seemed undisturbed by dramas elsewhere as yet. Robin avoided the main door, as Petra surely would have, and went to the inn yard at the back. It was a frantic bustle of late arrivals, all anxious to secure passage for that night, so no one paid any attention to him. But he saw no sign of Petra or Coquette. She'd be hiding, in shock over so grievously injuring a man. But wouldn't Coquette's misplaced devotion cause her to run to him, or at least bark? He circled the yard, poking his head into stables and carriage houses, ostler rooms and grain storage, but found no sign of them. Should he ask people? The soldiers would be here soon, so that would be dangerous. Perhaps she wasn't here. Or perhaps she was inside. Might she have sought refuge with the French couple and their convoy? He was turning to enter the inn when he spotted a wooden gate in an arch. He opened it and found a small walled garden, presumably for the use of guests. At the moment it was deserted, but overlooked by the inn. He saw no one in the windows. He scanned for hiding places. It contained a small lawn with a wide, white path around it. Between path and wall were beds of shrubs and small trees. But how could he search them? Was that a yip? He walked along the path, listening, wishing his boots didn't crunch so loudly on the gravel. A rustle? Over in that corner where a bay shrub nestled against a small tree. A branch fluttered. He went that way, calling a soft, "Coquette!" The dog flew out of the shrub and raced to leap into his arms, trembling in every delicate bone. His hand touched something sticky. Blood. Murmuring to her, he told himself that her race to him meant she wasn't badly hurt, but Vartzi had another bill to pay. "Where's Petra then, my sweet?" "Petra?" he called softly. Could the dog be here alone, or was Petra injured? Coquette was struggling to be put down, and he did so. She raced back to the motionless shrub. Robin followed and slipped behind it to find Petra huddled down in the corner of the wall, hugging herself, eyes huge, a smear of blood down one cheek. For a moment she shrank back as if she didn't recognize him, but then she scrambled up and she, too, threw herself into his arms. Robin held her close. "What an excess of amusement you're providing me, my dear. Can we please stop now?" She burst into a mix of laughter and tears, fortunately smothering them in his coat. He turned so he could see through the leaves and watch for any approach. When she calmed a bit, he touched her face. "Did Vartzi hurt you?" She shook her head, but her eyes were swollen and red, and skin blotchy from being pressed against his coat. He kissed her forehead gently, a wave of disconcerting tenderness rushing through him. It was far removed from excitement or lust, and thus much more dangerous. Petra leaned against Robin, wonderful Cock Robin, in danger of bursting into tears again for many reasons. She was so glad to see him, so distressed by what had happened, what she'd done, so terrified of consequences. "Did I kill that man?"
"I don't think so."
"Thank God! Thank God!" She looked up at him, as if he was her judge. "I had to do it. I had to escape."
"Assuredly. Calmly. Calmly. Is that his blood?" he asked, touching her face again.
"Oh!" She looked at her right hand, which had been so very bloody. "I wiped it as best I could."
"Shades of Macbeth," he said, and spat into his handkerchief to wipe at her face. "There. The damn spot is out."
Then he kissed her. It was gentle and tender, and probably intended only to be comforting, but it poured life into her in a painful, burning torrent. She pressed closer and hooked her hand behind his head to make the kiss deeper, to drink down more of him. To live. He held her tight, and his mouth responded, but she sensed resistance. "Of course," she thought, going still. He understood now the danger she represented. His men and his dog were all injured because of her. She pushed away.
"I'm sorry." "No more apologies.
but Coquette is decidedly de trop. The little dog was dancing around their feet, demanding his attention. He picked her up to gently explore the wound.
That's not her blood. My hand. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for saying I'm sorry.
She began to wipe away tears, but smelled the blood on her hand.
A Fontaine and Poic, all right?
I believe they'll survive, but you might have broken Fontaine's nose.
I'm sorry, but he would not let me go.
He gently tucked the tiny dog into his pocket. The question is, why did you want to?
I should have let them castrate Poic, she demanded.
He stared at her.
Fartsy really would have done that?
Of course. Then move on to other bits.
Struth.
You see what risk I've put you in. I never should have...
He captured her waving hands. All will be well now.
Oh, you!
Yes, me. He pressed her hands, smiling, but then stepped away, looking around the ground. Ah, there it is. He scooped up a bundle from the ground and shook out a dark red cloak.
Behold my having forethought for once.
He swirled it around her and fastened the tie at her throat.
It gapes. Can you wear your petticoat on the outside?
His light manner that had irritated her so much now soothed her like balm.
Yes, yes, of course.
She turned her back and untied the cream garment, then tied it on again on top. When she turned back, he said, better. He unpinned her forgotten hat, took out the cameo and gave it to her. Tuck that away somewhere and pull up the hood of the cloak. He stepped back to look her over. That'll do, I think. Let us depart this leafy glade. Petra hesitated, but then gathered her courage and brushed through the shrubs to the path. He followed, saying, Coquette's likely to give us away. He moved the dog under his coat, holding her in place with his arm and saying, hush. He pulled a wry face. Being court-trained, occasionally she obeys that.
She did for me. It probably saved her life.
Truly, Vartzi has many debts to pay.
He offered her his other arm and they strolled toward the gate. She could only pray Robin never encountered Vartzi at all. She glanced nervously at the inn windows.
I suppose if anyone sees us from the windows, they'll assume a tryst.
Of course. How did Coquette get injured?
It came so suddenly, it felt like an attack. I'm sorry about that.
Was it your fault, then?
This is all my fault, she said fiercely. Poic, Fontaine... Coquette yapped at Vartzi, so he hit her off with his cane.
Haven't you sense enough to know that you're pure decoration?
What?
Petra gasped.
Coquette, not you.
She's a little warrior. She tried to bite the other one, my guard. He was so startled I managed to land a blow.
Diamonds in your next collar, my valiant butterfly. But of your kindness, don't take such risks.
Petra almost felt he was addressing her too. Another burden to be protected, stroked and tolerated, because Robin Bonchurch was unable to shrug off inconvenient responsibilities. He unlinked their arms and opened the gate. They walked into the inn yard, but then she halted.
There are soldiers there, asking questions.
He forced her onward.
We're just a respectable couple taking the evening air.
As they passed, Petra heard one soldier ask about a woman in green with a white cat. The other was looking around. Robin wished him a good evening, adding something about a smooth passage tonight. The soldier agreed and turned his attention elsewhere. Petra's heart was racing, and her legs felt weak,
but she did her best to play her part. When Robin began idle chatter about the voyage and how delighted everyone would be to see her home, Petra responded mindlessly, grateful not to have to make sense of his words. She expected to return to the Renard, but noise, bustle, and the stink of seaweed woke her to the fact that they were near the ships. "Do try to look completely at ease," he said to her, smiling. "I set up a hue and cry for any woman being forced aboard a ship." Petra put on a smile and even managed a light laugh, as if he'd said something witty. He led her to a single-masted ship, where a hard-faced man with a strong nose said, "There you are, monsieur. Thought you'd changed your mind." "I became entangled in an incident," Robin said. "The man who had his balls sliced. He is a friend of yours." "Don't know him at all," Robin said, and assisted Petra onto the ship and into a sort of shed in the middle. He joined her and closed the door. "Again, poor accommodation, I'm afraid, but you must stay inside, out of sight."
"Of course."
It was a space about 8 feet long and 6 wide, with wide wooden benches on either side covered with a thin pad. She supposed they could serve as beds if necessary. Robin and she in here, at night, in beds. The small windows were still unshuttered, so they let in some light, but also stole privacy. That was good. But then he began to undress, stripping off coat, then waistcoat, then neckcloth and sword belt.
"What are you doing?" Petra protested.
"Becoming a common man. I'm going on deck to talk to Merian, but I don't want to be recognized either. Will I pass as a common sailor?"
She had to smile.
"No, but I don't suppose Vartzi has a good idea of what you look like." "Pray for that. Keep out of sight and make sure Coquette doesn't escape. She's like a flag. I'll urge Merian to leave as soon as the tide allows." As usual, Coquette tried to follow him. Petra held her small body tightly until the door closed, thanking her again for her part in the rescue. When she let the dog go, Coquette sniffed sadly at the door, then curled up on Robin's coat. Petra was alarmed by a temptation to do something similar herself. Suddenly overwhelmed by events, she sat on a bench so as to be invisible from outside. Vartzi really was here and as ruthless as ever. He had almost succeeded in capturing her. She had wounded that man. She covered her mouth with her hand, then almost gagged at the smell of blood. She must wash. She rose to demand water, but then sat down again. Vartzi would be searching furiously, and now he'd want revenge. When the door opened, she started, but then she recognized Robin, his hair tied back beneath a long knitted hat of some sort, a blue and yellow cloth knotted around his neck. "Sea water," he said, offering a tin bowl. "Best I can do at the moment." Petra took it, close to tears. "You are the most wonderful man." He shook his head. "You are astonishingly easy to please. Unlike this one." He picked up the yapping dog. "Hush!" Coquette did go quiet, but somehow managed to look reproachful. "I'm sorry, little one," he said, gave the dog to Petra, and left. Petra put Coquette down on his coat again, where the dog laid her head on her paws in a grieving pose. Petra was sure a good half of it was acting, so she said, "He's not here to see." She rubbed her hands together in cold salt water until no trace of blood remained. She couldn't wipe away the memory of her blade thrusting into flesh, however, or of hot blood gushing, or of the man's choked cry. She didn't know why he hadn't screamed.
but it had been a choke as he clutched himself. There. She'd not meant to do that. He'd been a big man, and when Coquette had distracted him, she'd simply thrust upward with her dagger, and that's where it had hit. She'd abandoned knife and victim, grabbed Coquette and fled. She remembered the empty scabbard for the dagger and took it off. It was useless now and might even be incriminating evidence. She stuffed it under one of the seats. She studied her gown beneath the cream petticoat. Yes, there was blood, but among the sprigs of spring flowers it didn't show. It might always stain her mind, however. Shakespeare had known of what he wrote.